From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
He has a wealth of clinical and practical experience focused on obstetrics and gynecology. He's an administrator who believes in helping students and faculty find their best in heart and hand. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Vice President of Clinical Affairs and the 18th Dean of the Howard University College of Medicine, Dr. Hugh Mighty. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick. Glad to be here.
So, Dr. Mighty, your roots to Howard University go back some ways, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Certainly. Well, I will start. If you really want roots, I would start from my journey way back in the small island of Jamaica, where I grew up. I went to this tiny school called Vaz Prep, at which time I would have no idea that I would go from there to this big country called the United States and, more importantly, ever end up in medicine. But certainly it was a good upbringing. I credit my parents, mostly my mom, my dad, who believed strongly in education, my mom, who believed in perseverance, who took the time, emigrated to this country, worked her way through many different areas in New York, and interestingly, actually landed at Howard University for her final job. But she imparted on me the importance of persevering and staying the course.
What job did she do at Howard University?
She actually worked at Howard in the Human Resources and the Benefits Department. So that goes back a ways.
That's great. That's great. So you received your bachelor's degree at Georgetown University and your MD at University of Maryland. What was your undergrad and med school experiences like at that time? As a dean now, when you look back at that medical education, you know, what do you see as the main differences?
Well, I think back then my main difference was really adaptation. The first thing we think about, when I think back to going to Georgetown, I think about how fortunate I was in having good mentors. When I went to Georgetown, I was actually quite young. I was still making the transition of coming from a small island in Jamaica to New York, which was huge. And I only spent really about 2.5 years in New York because I finished high school there. So coming to Washington for me was intimidating, to say the least. And I was very fortunate to have very good mentors on two fronts that I can recall. One was I ran track at Georgetown. I was on the track team. And my mentor there, the track coach, who told my mom if she let me go from New York to Georgetown, he would be my surrogate father forever. And he lived up to that. I still remember that in terms of studying, I was in his office every single day, and he would check the grades, and he would report back to my mom pretty much once a week. But he was forever on making sure that I stuck to the promise, which was I would get an education at Georgetown, which is what he promised her. And it turned out that he fulfilled that promise. So I was very fortunate. And mentoring, I think, has been the key to so many things that I've done. When I went from Georgetown to the University of Maryland, at first it was, again, a big leap to say I'm going to go and I want to go into medicine. We're going to do these things. And there was a gentleman who was in charge of minority affairs at the University of Maryland who took the trips down to Georgetown, spent time and do over the summers with me while I was enrolled in the summer sort of early pipeline program actually back at Georgetown then, and encouraged me to come to Maryland. Same thing. He encouraged me to come to an environment where he would be able to be supportive, and they would make sure that, as you would say, if we bring you here, we intend for you to complete the journey from our perspective. So I think mentorship is the very big thing that I have learned and I've held dear to throughout my time. So coming now to medicine and being a dean, I wish I would not say that anyone plans to be a dean. It happens, but it is an opportunity for me to give back.
Right. Now, when you look at OBGYN as a specialty, it obviously has gone through a lot of changes. and you're one of the few physicians in the country who is board certified in both maternal fetal medicine and critical care medicine. Tell us a little bit about how that has happened and then the transformation and evolution of OBGYN as a specialty in general.
Well, the journey to being a critical care obstetrician was one of circumstance. When I left medical school and I did my residency, I spent 3 years serving in the Public Health Service, the National Health Service Corps, and I spent those 3 years in a very underserved population around in Pimlico, Maryland, in Baltimore. And the patients I took care of, many of them were young teenage moms who got very ill. And so what I found is, as a generalist, I was battling the knowledge base of trying to take care of very sick patients in a very poor population and having the ability to do that. And so I spent 3 years doing that. At the end of 3 years, I decided to jump back into the academic world and went back and did a fellowship. And in the course of doing the fellowship, my division director back then said, you know, you can only go so far taking care of these sick moms. But I remember having debates with people in the ICU about how to manage blood pressures on sick patients in obstetrics and them telling me, no, you can't do it this way. And so finally, he said to me, you know, if you're ever going to change your mind, you're going to just have to go join them. And so that's what I did. He encouraged me to do that. I went on to do a critical care fellowship, which then gave me the tool set to be able to manage these people across the entire continuum. So that's how that actually occurred. Regarding changes in obstetrics, OB is a place that I tell the students and residents as they go through, it will be forever a mark on the world because most things start with obstetrics. And the largest change I'm going to tell you that I see coming in the field is the growth and the explosion of genetics and what we know about the genome and how we are going to be able to map and apply that to a developing fetus, you know, as it's going through its case. So we're starting to care for really what they're calling fetal therapy, if you would. We're starting to care for what will become kids while they're still in utero. And I think that's probably the most dramatic change that is occurring in obstetrics.
Exciting. You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is the Vice President of Clinical Affairs and the 18th Dean of the Howard University College of Medicine, Dr. Hugh Mighty. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. To change gears a little bit, the current medical student is carrying significant debt, and that is an issue that is affecting everyone nationally. What is your perspective about how that debt is being managed, and what is it like for the Howard University College of Medicine student?
Well, that is a huge challenge, without question. It's a huge challenge at Howard. It's a huge challenge across the country, but even more so for our students, because many of our students at Howard who come in carrying some debt. They have had to work hard and pay their way through their undergrad courses to get here, and now that they're here, there is a cost to getting through medical school. Managing that will require, I believe, actually a broad change across the nation. And I think in large part we need to go back and recognize that as the population ages and as our physician workforce ages, we're going to have a shortage. And rather than waiting for that shortage to occur, I really believe that we need to engage not just, I'd say, the public sector and government, but the private sector to understand that healthcare and quality delivery of healthcare is going to be everybody's issue. And as a nation, we have the resources to help these kids get through. So if we shift for a moment to say healthcare is really a right rather than a privilege, then for everyone to have access to that right, we're going to have to step up and fund education. Now, I'm all about the service of that. I don't think we should give it away. I think that we should look at giving a fair exchange to our kids coming through, and they in turn would give back service.
You've previously been the chair of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Maryland, as well as the Vice Chancellor for Clinical Affairs at LSU School of Medicine. Both public institutions, two very different states, but you were able to navigate, I would say, the politics, and in doing that, still develop social programs such as the Tamar's Children Program, which look at deferring incarceration for pregnant women with minor offenses in exchange for development of job and parenting skills. Tell me a little bit about that intersection of the geopolitical world at a state institution and the social aspects of social determinants of health and how you bend those?
So the first thing about politics, I think especially the politics of medicine, is to remember that almost all the politics is negotiation. It is really about selling a cause and having someone believe in that cause and being willing to support it. So it's really making the case that this is a good cause, and here's how it will benefit not only the people who are participating from the as drivers, but here's how it benefits the recipients. So you take Tamar's Children, which was a program which I didn't think about but was brought to me, and someone said, we need you to lead this charge. We need an obstetrician who understands women's health and understands these circumstances to lead this cause. So at first I was sort of the recipient. I'm the person that someone says, you know, you got to get involved with this. And I first thought about it and I wasn't so sure, but then they took me through to Baltimore City Jail. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to see women who were in the jail who were pregnant in conditions that were just atrocious. And that got you going and got you motivated to say, we can't have this. And these are not women who had created some large crime. They were there for shoplifting and relatively minor offenses. Well, the good thing about that is I had an opportunity to sit in front of a large panel from all different walks of government, from education and housing, from the prison system, in front of judges. And we had a large panel who were all committed to one thing, to change that factor. So my job, in a sense, became easier because I could sell the knowledge base. I was neutral to the political system, so I could speak to all sides. And at the end, we all worked together, and the program got created and got launched because of we could negotiate around a common interest. Where do we want to go?
Now, as we close, I want you to map out for our listeners, what is your vision of the Howard University College of Medicine? What can they expect over the next decade? And in terms of the delivery of care in your role as the Vice President for Clinical Affairs?
Sure. So I look at it from, I break it down into this way. What is our mission? And our mission at its very core is teaching. We're an institution that's a university because we teach, first and foremost. So I look at our students as our clients and customers, and we have a duty to them to mold them into being quality physicians, inquisitive scientists at the end of their time with us, and to carry that forward. So as we do that, our mission is to teach, and at the end of that teaching sphere are patients. They're the people in the communities that they will touch. So the first core thing that I look forward to doing is to develop the culture first around that, that we are about service, and that our mission is to educate these young men and women who come to us to go out and do what they do. So that's step one. Step two is development of tools. The world has changed. We have a generation that's grown up with electronics, and it's a faster pace, and their brains really do work faster, but they don't still have the knowledge. So it's to look to our faculty and develop our faculty talent. Our faculty have an abundance of knowledge. And the greatest thing, that challenge that I think we're going to have, is to take that knowledge, translate it on the fly into what our students need to gain to become better. So faculty development is huge, and that's one of the key things that I have. So those are the two first things that I look for. The third, of course, is inquisitiveness. We are, that knowledge base we have is there because people research, because they always ask the question, and they then develop the knowledge that they impart. So we can't forget the importance of research. Research, unfortunately for us in this time, is got to be funded research. It's so hard to get dollars and grants and things. So it's, again, to work to understand the negotiation. It's to let the outside world, NIH and other places, understand that we have a core talent that has always delivered. For over 100 years we have delivered, and we can still deliver, and we have unique skill sets that we need, again, need to go out and make the case so we get that research support, so we continue to develop the knowledge base that we pass on.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been the Vice President for Clinical Affairs and the 18th Dean of the Howard University College of Medicine, Dr. Hugh Mighty. I think it's safe to say that since its founding in 1868, the College of Medicine is in a safe place on this aspect of its journey with Dr. Mighty. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.
WHUR is wherever you are. Download our new app and listen to us on your iPhone, iPad, Android, or listen to us online at TuneIn and WHUR.com.